Yeah, this is my life. I'm done trying to convince people I'm real. Sleep,
never retreat. Welcome to the Road to the Trials podcast presented by Koros Wearables. I love Koros. It's my favorite watch brand. I've tried them all. I've tried every single brand. And this is the brand that I have stuck with now for over 2 years. And I couldn't be more excited that they are now the presenting sponsor here on the Road to the Trials podcast. Today's episode is with Tyler Day. Tyler is an NAU alumnus, Northern Arizona University. He is, you know, from Arizona, and now he trains with the Northern Arizona Elite. What a great group that is, my goodness. So Tyler, I'm so excited to talk with him. As you'll hear, an extremely funny guy, very eclectic, and also an extremely, extremely good runner. And just like what you heard if you listened to Tuesday's episode with Dana Giordano, Tyler's also battling a little injury here. So I know it's one of those things where, like, hey, why would you want to have someone on the show who's battling an injury? We're supposed to get a lead up to the trials here. Well, this is the way it goes, man. Sometimes athletes are beset by injuries, just like all of us as a dedicated amateur runners are. That's just the way it goes. And, you know, hearing how someone fights through that to try to achieve a dream, I think is extremely worthwhile. And that is one of the many reasons, just one of the many, many reasons that I couldn't wait to speak with Tyler. As you may hear in this episode, we had a little audio malfunction near the end where we just had a hard time hearing each other. So the recording is fine, but you'll hear that Tyler lays down some jokes near the end of the podcast that I just didn't hear in real time. So I didn't get a chance to laugh at them or just kind of give them the proper due that I normally would, because he's hysterical. But so if you're wondering, like, wow, that Tyler joke didn't land with the host, well, it's not, the host didn't hear it. All I can say. But this is an awesome guy. Go follow him on all the social media channels and, you know, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. This is your first time hearing it, because he's one of six people who are just phenomenal people that I just am so excited to talk to for the next 5 to 6 months. So let's get into it with Tyler Day. Hello, Tyler, and welcome to season two of the Road to the Trials podcast.
What's up, Matt? Thank you for having me on the podcast. Glad to be here for season two.
Oh, I'm so excited. You know, you're part of the Hoka Naz Elite team. It really is exciting to work with, Kellen Taylor in season one. Here, you in season two, not only just individually, both of you are, you know, captivating people who are doing really interesting things in the running world, but also just your team in particular, the way that you are so open and share so many things with runners all over the place. That is really exciting to you know, peel back the curtain a little bit and see exactly what's going on, not only with your team, which, you know, you guys are very open, but also with you personally, to see exactly physically, mentally, emotionally, what you're going through as you pursue one of your goals.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm not going to say that it's a downgrade for you guys talking to me compared to talking to Kellen, but I appreciate to have a spot for this season. But yeah, no, I'm in a unique situation where, most teams are kind of hush-hush on how they do things or how they roll. And for us, we're the exact opposite. You know, one of the three main pillars we have is share the journey. And I guess this checks off that box. So I think I'm doing my job correctly. I don't know. I might hear afterwards from my coach.
So here, this is great. If that's part of the pillars, share the journey. You're just delegating it to me. I'm doing it for you.
Perfect, man. Easy money. That's what I hear. Check is in the mail, Matt. Check is in the mail.
There you go. Just got to give me one of those Sasquatch shirts. I know they sell out quick. That's all I need.
Yeah, I mean, I barely got anything left for my family. So I have to beat you to that punch for my own family.
I love that. I love that. All right. So let's get into the first two questions that I've asked every single person during their intro episodes. And the first one is, when did being a part of the Olympic Games just become a dream of yours, even the smallest sliver of a dream?
Yeah. So smallest sliver of a dream. This is kind of a little bit of a two-parter. One was my family are fanatics of the Olympics, regardless if it's summer or winter. I think it's just crazy how the world kind of, you know, turns their attention to one event. Hopefully it's positive, but obviously there's been some, you know, sad stuff that's happened at the Olympics. But you can see everyone try to compete their very best at sports that have been played for hundreds and hundreds of years. So I remember just growing up and seeing the Olympics, and I was like, oh man, I wanted to be in the Olympics. And at that time I was a baseball player. So for me, my dream was to play for the Arizona Diamondbacks and win World Series titles for them and become a baseball Hall of Famer and retire in the Hamptons or something like that. And so I remember baseball was in the Olympics. So I thought, okay, one day it'd be kind of cool to be a baseball player for the Olympics and such. And then they quickly took that away. And as quickly as they took that away, my arm strength from baseball decided to deteriorate. I wonder why. Thanks, Dad, for the genes. I just remember from a young age, I want to be part of the Olympics. And then when I was a freshman going into my sophomore year of high school at Mesquite High School in Gilbert, Arizona, that's when the 2012 London Olympics happened. And at the time, I mean, I was really getting into running. I've only been running hardcore, if you want to call it, for about 3 years. I didn't know how. I wanted to see how far I could take it to see if I could do anything with it. Since my love of baseball, I put so much time and effort in there, and you know, that didn't work out. So I wanted to try something new sporting wise. And during the 2012 Olympics, Galen Rupp got silver in the 10K. And I remember people were freaking out. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, like an American has a podium in the 10K in like a long time. And for me, I was like, well, why? It should be a norm. Like we should be kicking butt at the 10K. So seeing Galen Rupp, as an American, seeing an American get second, I was like, man, I would love to be in a 10K race at the Olympic level or be able to podium, with USA across my chest at the Olympics. So yeah, seeing that 10K in 2012 definitely inspired me to be like, all right, let's see if I can follow this Olympic road.
Yeah, absolutely. And when did it switch from being a dream? I love the baseball dream. It's like when you think of baseball, no one thinks of the Olympics. It's so funny that like it like sparked with you in that frame of mind. When I think of the Olympics, I think of like, you know, people, Olympic baseball, like, you know, so many athletes like basically saying, yeah, I'm going to go play for this country because like my great, great grandmother grew up there. And it was like, there's such like wild diaspora of people like playing for countries that they were never like a part of to begin with, which is probably why it didn't really gain traction. But with that being said, when did it shift for you from becoming, you know, I'm a fan of the Olympics, wouldn't it be great if someday, but these kind of abstract ideas to becoming a legitimate goal?
Yeah, I think it'd be when I was at NAU. I don't know what year at NAU I was. I think the first part was I did a 10K my true junior year. It was at Stanford. And myself and Matt Baxter and Peter Lamont decided to do a 10K there. And Andy Truard did a 5K. It was only a select few of us. And I believe it was Peyton Jordan. It was the premier Stanford, like Stanford race. And people were saying like, oh, how low can they go for the 10K time? Because that was the year where Matt and myself got second and third in cross country NCAAs. And so, yeah, the 10K went on and I don't know what place I got. I think I was like sixth or seventh, but I remember the time was counting down and I wanted to break 28 in the 10K so bad. And I was in the final stretch, like the last 100, when I saw the clock strike 28, and I heard like the collective aw from like the audience when I crossed the line at 28:04, because at the time the Olympic standard was 28 flat, and so in my mind I was like, holy crap! Not only did I PR in the 10K, but I'm 4 seconds away from an Olympic standard. This is absolutely nuts. So I think from then on I was like, hey, like I think there's a chance. If I could quote, you know, an Academy Award winning film, Dumb and Dumber, I think, you know, I was thinking to myself, hey, I think this is a chance, you know, but sidebar, Dumb and Dumber is not an Academy Award winning film.
I was about to jump in there. I love that movie as much as anybody, but I didn't think it won the Academy Award.
It won an Academy Award in my heart. Definitely outperformed Titanic by a million miles for me. When I hit that 28:04, I was like, wow, I think I could do this. And then, of course, naturally, the standard was then dropped like the next year. And I went from 4 seconds to half a minute away from the standard. So
I love that story for so many reasons. But the one that really sticks out right away is just how well versed the crowd was. in these time goals. Like, first of all, it's been like weird for you, unless you had complete understanding of like where the crowd was coming from, that like they basically let out this big sigh just as you were about to cross the finish line. It's not exactly the roaring applause that one would expect from, you know, a Hallmark race.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was interesting, you know. I know FloChack was, you know, saying like, oh, this is a really stacked field. And they had clips of, you know, Eric Selensky just happened to break the American record. You know, it was, you know, it wasn't planned, but it just happened. And I know myself and Matt, we were getting pumped and we're like, yo, like, let's see how low we can go. Like, we're super fit. Like, we got this. And yeah, and that was when like Shadrach Kipkechir was just tempoing to an easy 27:30 and absolutely torched the field. That was when I first raced against Noah Drotty, and since then on, he's always been a cool dude with me. And that was when I think Garrett Heath did his first 10K. That was like also his like 10K debut. But yeah, no, so it was like a lot of storylines going on. But I think for us college kids in particular, we wanted to try to obviously get times to get into regionals, but also I want to see how low I can go. And yeah, it's just, it kind of sucks that it's not like a super roar. It's like, oh, like it's just, I've never been in that position before. And it's something I'll never forget either. It's, I've never been so bummed to get a PR in my life.
Yeah. Bummed to get a PR. Yeah, hey man, that's like every amateur runner has that feeling for sure. And I had this one that I've related to so many times. So let's marinate in that spot for a little bit. Because you're at Northern Arizona University, and you grew up, you know, two and a half hours south of there. And, you know, at NAU, not only is it, you know, you've got this great coach, you've got this great team, there's a lot of history with this program. You guys are just doing really good things just within the program itself. But beyond that, physically, there's great runners everywhere in the community. And when you're at NAU, how well-versed are you, not only in terms of like how your fitness or your time stack up to your peers, but how you stack up to the fact that like, hey, you got pros right down the street, you know, from where you're working out, or they might be working out right next to you. Like, what is that like in terms of, you know, just the dichotomy between the insularity of a college team and the expansiveness of like, hey, some of the best pros in the world are just right down the street from you.
Yeah, it was a very interesting dynamic for sure. There's been a couple of times I did hear Mo Farah telling us track when we were in the middle of our workout when he was running us down. You know, that was a typical thing.
You can't just glide over that. Explain. I love to hear more about this example, because I had this exact same experience from Kim Smith. Smith once ran me down at the Brown University track. It was her and her two of her best friends, and it was like getting passed by horses. I've never experienced anything like it.
Yeah, I'll do this tangent first, but I definitely want to answer your question. But yeah, no, it was always around, you know, the Olympic time. And for me, I was only around at NU for one of them, and it was for the Rio Olympics. And we've had, you know, during springtime, you know, we're out there first, we're out there bright and early because some of us have class, you know, some of us actually, you know, are trying to get that degree. And so we're doing our workout, you know, we're doing what we need to do. And slowly but surely, like, you know, people that you recognize, you know, walk in through the, you know, to the track, you know, you see like the Bowerman peeps, you see the Oregon Track Club peeps. You see Salazar's team go through there, you know, a few of them. And you see people from like completely different countries, you know, like Great Britain had people that were there. Japan had people that were there. I think a few African nations had select people that were there. That when we got done with our workout, cool down and all, it looked like it was a mini track meet of like the most fittest people like in the world up at, you know, little NAU. Yeah, there's been a few times where I just threw Mo out there. I don't think he ever said track to us, but he got close. We obviously like got out of the way because there's so many freight trains behind us. But yeah, there was a lot of athletes that, you know, they would be trying to chill on the inside, and we're like, oh yeah, like track and all that fun jazz. So yeah, with you talking about Kim Smith being ran past like horses, felt like we were in the middle of like a stampede at the time. Like I shouldn't be nervous doing my workout, yet I have like a world medalist like hot on my trail, and I'm shooting a 400, you know, they're not giving me space. So it's a very unique dynamic that is really funny to look back on. Cause yeah, it's just, we were very fortunate for us NAU peeps to, be surrounded by so much talent. And then to, answer your first question, what was your, first question again? I apologize.
Oh yeah. Just what was it? What did it feel like? You kind of did answer it though. Like this kind of, what did it feel like to have that dynamic of, you know, your highly accomplished team.
Gotcha.
And your coach, and you guys are this insular group who trains and workouts together. And just the nature of a college team is very siloed in a lot of ways, but yet, you know, right down the street are some of the people that you probably even look up to in the sport. If you have people that you look up to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, for me, I was very naive to the fact that I really wasn't like a total running nerd. Like I wasn't like, oh, that's blah, blah, blah. Did you know that his splits during like the Dubai, like Diamond League, he did this. Like I wasn't that hardcore into it. For me, I was like, oh, I know that dude's an American. I've seen him at USA's. I think I ran against him. He totally torched me, but ran against him. So for me, it was just whenever I compare myself outside of NAU, such as the pros that you speak of, it was just kind of like, oh man, like could we compete on their level one day? But right now I'm just in the same races, not really giving him a run for their money. And when it was just within the team, I just mostly compare myself to that. Like that was like my totem pole showing, you know, see if I was the eagle on top or if I was the dirt beneath the totem pole was my NAU peeps. And it's just because like we have some of the best. I mean, now we have a lot of the best, but even back then, even before we won a national title or anything, we still had some of the best distance runners go to that university. So for me, I think with me focusing on how I was comparative to my teammates, it did allow me to branch out and be able to take a run at to the pros without having, you know, the idol hunting ideology behind it. So like, oh my gosh, like this is a medalist, like I shouldn't be up here. It was like, oh well, Matt told me I couldn't do this split, so I'm gonna show that dude. You know, it was something along that vein.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like a personality test in terms of when you have those people surrounding you and you're kind of still at a formative age within your running career. Not that you're far removed from it now, but you know, you're not, you haven't matured into the runner that you can become, I guess. And when you come across people like that in such close proximity and so consistently, it's a personality test in some ways in terms of, is it motivating to be like, wow, look what's possible. I wonder if I can get there. What do I need to do to kind of be in that group? Or for some other people, I can imagine being a little demoralized and be like, hey, I'm out here setting PRs and I'm getting like tracked by these people like constantly. Like, this is wild. Like, what am I doing out here? You know, and I can imagine it being like people falling into different camps or not even that. Maybe there's a range and maybe people fall within different spots in that range. And maybe that spot changes depending on mood and injury history and time of year. But I can imagine it being a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, no, it was definitely both a force of like something to strive for, pun intended. But it was also sometimes part of it just kind of like a self-reflection, kind of like how much faith do you have in yourself? And I did battle with both. I remember during my rise to the top of NAU/NCAA, I was that dude. I was like, hey, I don't know if I should be in this race. I mean, my times show it, but like the firepower in this race is just so significant. I just had one good race and I think Coach Smith might've pulled a few strings to get me into this heat, you know, sort of mentality. And it got to the point where there's been so many times where Coach Smith pulled me aside and he was just like, hey, dude, like you got to trust yourself. Like you can definitely be up there. Like you earned your spot. You're not this scared little high school dude anymore. I was just happy to be here. Like you've put in the work. I've seen you put in the work like firsthand. He's like, it's been a few times. Just like, I've tried to make you cripple in workouts and you just laughed at me. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, so it got to the point where towards the end there, I definitely got a lot more confidence in myself in that vein. So yeah, it's really like a double-edged sword. Like younger me was like, wow, like kind of like starstruck, like, oh, I saw this dude on YouTube. Now I'm racing against him. And now like older me was like, hey, if my dream is to be a professional runner, I can't see these guys. I mean, I could respect them, you know. I mean, that's the number one thing you could do is respect a runner, whatever they do, whatever gender and whatever race, you could respect them, but don't put them on a pedestal to, you know, think that they're bigger than you. Cause at the end of the day, now that I'm a professional runner, like they're my competition. They're not just a dream anymore. Like they're people I actually have to compete against in order to make teams or be able to put food on the table or, you know, anything of that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And when it came to doing that exact thing, you know, being a pro, putting food on the table, what about joining up with Ben Rosario and the NAS Elite team worked for you?
Yeah. So a big one was it's in an area that I know I really like. I'm a big responder to elevation. So I did look at some high altitude places. That was a big one. But also I think the big one that came to it was they gave me an opportunity when times of getting the opportunity was very sparse. I mean, with COVID, a lot of big companies weren't, you know, offering anything. And it makes sense. I'm not bitter about that. I totally respect the decision. I was just surprised that Hoka wanted to offer me a job after I was telling, hey, you know, and all the people I talked to are like, hey, we would love to have you on the team. But it's just because of the times that we're in. And I was like, hey, man, I totally understand. And even if Hoka was just like, and before the start of this, Hoka was on the top of my list before COVID, before any limitations from companies that were offering me anything, just because of, you know, Coach Rosario and also his dual factor of coaching marathoners and track people, because I see myself be on the track and eventually translate to the marathon. But yeah, another one was just, yeah, Hoka, you know, gave me a job during a time where it was very sparse, and I'm very thankful for them for that. So it's just a melting pot of everything, the coaching, the dynamics of the team, the location of the team, and then what the company stands for and what their belief system behind those athletes that they sponsor.
Hey, folks, the Road to the Trials podcast is presented by Koros Wearables, makers of performance GPS watches that help athletes train to their best. Athletes like world record marathoner Eliud Kipchoge and multi-time U.S. champion Emma Coburn trust Koros watches to track their training from long runs to track workouts. With their innovative track mode, which I, frankly, I'm just going to input this, I love their track mode. This is one of the reasons I love these watches. You can measure your next track workout to near perfection, whether you've got 400 meter repeats in lane one or a 4 mile tempo in lane five. You can trust Koros watches to provide the stats that you crave. So show your support for the brands that support this podcast and pick up the Pace 2, the lightest GPS watch on the market. Enter code TRIALS at checkout on Koros.com. That's Koros.com for free accessory with your purchase. You can just pick whichever one you like after you enter the code. So when you use the Koros product, you know you're getting a premium watch designed, tested, and perfected by the athlete and for the athlete. Give Koros a follow on Instagram or on Facebook at Koros Global. Koros, explore perfection. And when you think about what you are, you know, do best at now and things that you want to pursue in the short term, what races really stick out? I know in a past conversation, we talked about the 10K, but obviously you're coming from college where, you know, 5K plays a big part in it as well. And you've also done very well there.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think that the way how I'm built, I could suffer for a long time. And I'm very strong in the 10K. And there was a time where my 10K PRs out trumped my 5K PRs. And after my recent indoor season, when I was in college, my 5K just ended up out trumping my 10K PR. But yeah, no, it's I definitely would like to try avenues in the 5K as well. See if I could try to make some world teams in the 5K. See if I could definitely make some world teams in the 10K on track. And I want to try to be able to be a competitor for mile and 1500 stuff. I probably don't have that world-class speed to make world teams, but I would love to still stick it with the pros that are, you know, that's their niche and be able to be well-versed right there. And also I would love to just do cross. Like I know Joshua Cheptegei, he's a monster on the track. We all know that. We all saw what he had. We saw what he did last year in the Diamond Leagues and such. But the dude's also a monster on the grass for cross country. And I think I have a really good aerobic system, and personally, in America, I think I have a good track record in cross. And so I definitely would like to make world teams in the cross and be able to represent on the grass, on the dirt, or wherever they're going to hold the cross thing. So those are just kind of short term. I definitely just want to try to do track stuff. And then yeah, a little bit long term, I definitely see myself as a marathoner. Many people in my life that are coaches, they might have scratched their head like, oh, you know, you're probably not that good in the 5K, or yeah, 5K is good for you, or, you know, anything of that matter. But the one general consensus is just like, you're going to be really good on the roads. I definitely want to try to do road stuff in between there, you know, all the short stuff. But I feel once I sell my soul, well, I'm a redhead, so it's kind of hard to sell something you don't have. But once I do sell my soul to the roads, I want to give it all that I got and see if I can make, you know, the marathon and be able to be the, you know, hotshot in the marathon. I just want to be like Fauble, pretty much, just be the next hotshot in the marathon, I guess.
I love that. As someone who has a lot of red hair, maybe I have like half a soul. I make up for it with my overabundance of freckles, I guess. You know, this is not the Gingers Unite podcast, but if we need to go there,
if the race is canceled, we can
tangent this sucker whenever we need to. That's hysterical. So it seems like you just love competing.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I was learned. Like, I know in high school, I used to freak out when I had to compete. And I was like, oh, I just want to run. And I just hated, like, you know, just competing against a lot of people. And now that I'm older, it makes me sound like I'm super old, but I barely age a little bit, I guess. Didn't mature. But I think it was just, yeah, I'm excited to test myself, you know, to see what I can do in the distance, but also see who can push me. And that took a while for me to learn, but I definitely like to compete. I'm a very competitive person, and I've never met a professional athlete that's like, are you a competitive person? Nah, I'm fine. You know, I'm content. You know, I feel like if you're a professional in anything for that reason, you're super competitive in that realm.
Yeah, absolutely. Which makes this year even more interesting, because you graduate college and all of a sudden you're this competitive person excited to race and there are no races. So what was that situation like for you? I'm just gonna leave it open-ended. I mean, it's a very unique time to graduate and enter a pro team.
Yeah. I mean, first off, it's a miracle that I graduated. My mom could tell you that. But yeah, no, it was, it's just such a weird dynamic. I think when I did turn pro, I was so used to not being able to race just because, like, I mean, I was in Albuquerque when NCAA and the whole entire, you know, America was just like, hey, we're going to cancel everything. And so there's a times where I was just sitting at home, like just dormant for months, just not being able to do anything. And then, you know, having the thought process of like, well, I do have an extra NCAA year. Do I go back to school? But there's no races. Who knows? There's races in the new year. And then, Hoka came by, gave me an offer. And I was like, all right, I guess I'm going pro. And it was weird because, like, once I did turn pro, I did talk to Coach Ben, and that's when he was in talks with the other coaches to do the Ekiden and a half marathon in Michigan. So it was really funny where in like my last, essentially like my last season at NAU, it was just so much time that we didn't have a race. And then once I joined NAZ Elite, we literally had a race within like a month and a half.
Yeah. And a very unique race for pros, but for someone who's coming from the college route, like you must have been like, hey, a team effort. This is great. Like, that's pretty much the situation you'd come from. Obviously, Ekiden is very different. You know, basically, people who don't know, it's kind of like the cross country or road version of a relay race. But it's extremely popular in Japan. It's like the national sport besides baseball. You would have done very well in Japan. Your two favorite sports align perfectly with what they're up to. But it really is an interesting concept. It was really fun to see that happening. When you stepped into that situation, obviously, you know, you mentioned, like it was pretty quick in terms of when you joined the team. But when you all of a sudden you're thrust into this, not many races are happening. Now, not only do you have your kind of your first professional contest, but it's one in which literally your teammates are depending on you, in a matter of speaking, because how you do directly relates to how they're going to potentially do and how the team does. What was that feeling like?
Yeah, it was really weird. I just remember just daydreaming while I was in class at NAU when it was just normal times that I always thought that I was going to put on like my first professional kit at the Olympic trials and be able to show off in front of, you know, so many people at Eugene, like which team I represent now as a professional. And now here I am in the middle of close to Detroit, Michigan, with like three other, you know, smaller teams And we're going to be running around a lake and I have a sash around me. It was kind of like a weird, like, whoa, like this is not what I expected. But it was kind of a cool takeaway where, you know, most professional races, it's usually something high stakes, such as the trials, or it's like trying to hit a time. For me, I get to do a relay. Like, that's such a unique thing to say. Like, my first professional race was a relay. And coming from a dude that did very little DMRs and 4x8s in high school and college, this was like, whoa, I actually feel like a team member. And also my track record of being on a team was very successful compared to what I do stuff individually in national ranks. So I work really well on the team than I do by myself, I guess. But it was really interesting. I just remember, like, I was super fit going into the Ekiden, and the way how they scheduled things was that Coach Ben was like, we're going to give the 10K legs to those who are really fit now. And I guess I fit that mold because everyone was just like, yeah, Tyler, you're doing the 10K leg. And I was like, sweet, just as long as I'm, you know, I get to be on the team, I will make the trip. I'll love to go. But yeah, and then fast forward to being on the starting line, I was just freaking out. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is like my first professional race. I looked down, I said the Hokus symbol and NAZ Elite. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe this is coming true. Like, I'm actually going to legit be a professional runner. And I'm looking around and it's not thousands of screaming faces in Eugene. It's like, I think all of five people in the park, because they tried to, it was restricted due to COVID, but it had like the same feeling, you know, like the same feeling of like, oh my gosh, I have to provide for my team. If I don't, I'm an idiot and I'm going to get kicked off the team and I got to go back to school. And I was like, oh my Lord, I don't know what to do. And then next thing I know, like the gun went off and I was like, all right, I guess we're going. And yeah, no, it was definitely like a huge rust buster. I, at that point in my life, the last time I ran a 10K was when I was in Austin, Texas for the, I think it was like 2020 outdoors, if I'm right. But yeah, it was my last race in Austin. And so I was like, okay, like 6.2 miles, here we go. But yeah, it was such a surreal feeling. And I had a really good leg and I handed it off to Lauren Higgins, who's on our team. And she went off with her leg. And yeah, we didn't look back from there.
All right, so let's talk about the remainder of your 2020 schedule, because you had, like, talk about your variety of distances. You know what I mean? Like, you got some track stuff later in the year. You got some half marathon stuff. As you mentioned before, like, you kind of are up for anything, and that's pretty much what you got.
Yeah, yeah. So after the Ekiden, I did the half marathon, and after the half marathon, I totally regretted my decision of trying to be a marathoner because that was a really hard race. But yeah, no, I PR'd in my half marathon and I guess I was close to a team record. I guess I went 62:15, which the last time I ran a half marathon, it was in Vegas and that was just a bad time, man. That was running on the strip is cool, but would I do it again? I have no idea. It was so tough. But yeah, no, I did the half marathon in Michigan and then, yeah, and then back in and we had our eyes back on December 5th. It was going to be the track meet where I was going to try to punch my ticket for not only the Olympic trials, but try to get the Olympic A standard. And yeah, my Achilles flared up in that race, and I had to walk off the track. It's one of my very few, I think it's like my third DNF in my whole entire career that I had to walk off the track on that. So yeah, I've only had two full races, one half a race as a pro, and it's very up and down. I feel like I had like a whole entire career in just 4 months as a professional runner.
So how are you feeling now?
I'm feeling good. Yeah, I'm feeling a lot better. But yeah, no, I'm able to run a little bit more now, and yeah, just trying to get back to where I used to be and try to gear up for any races that are on the horizon to get that A standard.
Yeah, because I know originally you were on the list for the Trials of Miles race down in Austin, I think. So do you have any sense of kind of how things are progressing in terms of when you're going to be, you know, getting to different stages in your recovery and getting, you know, fully ramped up from a running perspective?
We haven't really put a solid timeline on like, hey, you have to be running at this point in order to go. But we do have our eyes on maybe potentially some meets in May to try to be able and hit those times. I believe that if worse does come to worse, I believe my 5K from indoor does qualify me for the trials, but I'm not sure if that does count. But yeah, I think we're just looking towards a May meet, but hopefully I get better before then so I can get something under my feet.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So this has been a really interesting intro conversation, and I'm really excited to dive into, you know, in a few weeks, we'll reconnect, see how you're progressing, and take a real deep dive into exactly what you are doing now, what you have done, and from a PT perspective, and kind of what the next couple steps may be, because so many people can relate to what you're going through right now in terms of, I've got this big goal, I'm not completely healthy, but I think there's a chance where we can make this work, but we got to make sure that we align it just right. So I know a lot of people will be really interested to see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and for me, I was pretty consistent when I was in college, and my whole entire career, I've been pretty consistent. And this is the first time I've actually had an injury that's really sidelined me. So this one's definitely testing me. And I remember that when I was injured and after that 10K in California, I was just super bitter, and I was kind of like, I don't know, I was just like a moody teen, I felt like, but I just had to remind myself that, hey, this is part of the job, and everyone goes through it. You know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. So I just got to learn how to be patient, which is something that's really hard to learn. And yeah, hopefully my journey into getting back into the thick of it could be relatable to anyone else out there, running wise or non-running wise.
I love it. All right, Tyler, thank you so much. It's been really great to connect with you for the first time, and I look forward to talking again in a couple weeks.
For sure, Matt. Yeah, can't wait to talk to you again.
Tyler, thank you so much for coming on the show. A 3-episode week here on the Road to the Trials podcast. So much fun talking to Dana and Frank, and today with Tyler. Next week, we're going to do a follow-up, kind of a recap episode with Frank and Kira D'Amato, because they're running the Trials of Miles down in Austin, Texas this weekend. If you're listening to this, you can see a live stream of those races over on the Sidious Mag YouTube channel. I will definitely be watching them, not just to watch Frank and Kira, but to watch all the runners who are going to be involved in a truly awesome race. Tomorrow over on the Rambling Runner podcast, we have Ramblings on the Run with Allie and Matt. And that's the episode that I do once a month with Allie Feller. And this month it's going to be on my podcast, which means next month it will be over on her show. Such a great conversation. All my conversations with Allie are so much fun. I just love talking to that woman. This one was even more fun than they usually are. So if you want to hop over on the Rambling Runner tomorrow to go check that out, please do. It will be a blast. Thank you so much for listening, and happy running. This has been a production of the Rambling Runner Podcast Network. Thank you to my producer, David Margetti, from In Post Media. Also, thank you to Meta P for the music and his song, Evolution. Real versions.